Welcome to episode 25 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. A lot of stuff to talk about after this weekend's games. Might as well just get right into it.
Yeah, so Gleyber Torres was benched in the middle of a game on Friday, as everyone that's listening knows about it. For those that somehow missed it, Gleyber Torres smoked the ball down the line, thought it was a home run for a second, realized that it wasn't, hit the ball so hard that he can only get to first base. Now, there's always a question, would he have been thrown out if he was hustling right away because he hit the ball so hard? But regardless, he didn't hustle out of the box. Only had a single, and then eventually was thrown out at home on an extra base hit. I don't remember who hit it, but didn't score, got thrown out, and was removed from the game after his last defensive inning by Aaron Boone. And then there was a, I wouldn't call it a confrontation, but there was a conversation between Gleyber and Aaron Boone. Gleyber looked like he was pleading his case, and Aaron Boone looked like he had had enough. So Gleyber Torres got benched for the rest of the game, came back later, and then after the game was very accountable for his actions and his on-field behavior, and then was in the lineup the next day hitting fifth. So you were there. You also asked a very good question to Aaron Boone in the post-game press conference. So what were your thoughts about everything that went down with Gleyber?
I think the first point I had after Gleyber hit the ball, like, it was inexcusable that he stood there for as long as he did. I believe it's the slowest time he had this year on a single. A lot of players around the league, you know, admire their work, and sometimes it goes over the wall. Sometimes it doesn't. And in Gleyber's case, the ball didn't leave the ballpark and it was a single. Now, the second thought I had is he hit that ball 110.7 miles per hour and Gleyber is slow. So I don't know if he's even busting out of the box that he's at second base. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, he could have had an opportunity. Obviously, he could have had an opportunity if he, you know, was running out of the box. But with how hard the ball was hit, I don't remember who was playing left field at this time, but the left fielder fielded the ball cleanly, got it in pretty fast. You know, I don't know. Maybe Gleyber's at second. Maybe he's thrown out. But what led to him getting benched is, you know, he didn't even give himself the opportunity to even try getting on second base. So that was ultimately why he ended up getting benched. Now, two batters later, Anthony Volpe hits the ball down the line and Gleyber's thrown out at home. I didn't really have a problem with Gleyber getting thrown out at home. You know, Luis Rojas, third base coach, sent him home. He's following the coach's orders. Now, Rojas has to, you know that Gleyber's not fast. He was out by like 7 feet. Now, when the ball was coming home, you know, Gleyber shrunk his body as like he was scared to like get hit by the ball, which was not the ideal thing to do because, you know, if the ball hits Gleyber in the back, it's a live ball and Gleyber is safe at home. But, you know, he wasn't benched for that. He was benched because he didn't run hard out of the box. And then, you know, as I was thinking about it after it became clear that Gleyber got benched, my next thought was, why Gleyber? Honestly, because, Gleyber's obviously done this numerous times throughout his Yankees career, whether it's, you know, admiring a home run, just not hustling on certain plays. You know, he was benched in June because one of the reasons why was that Boone took exception, or I forget the exact wording. I think he said it like came to my attention, and it was a game against the Mets at Queens where Glaber hit a slowly hit ground ball to shorts to Francisco Lindor, and Lindor threw him out by like 10 feet. You know, at the time, I believe like the ball was hit 62 miles an hour, and Glaber just wasn't running hard out of the box. Okay, that's fine and all, and obviously Glaber has a history of, you know, not hustling, losing focus, whatever. But how many times have you seen Yankees over the past several years not run hard out of the box or admire home runs that ended up not going out or were fly balls? I mean, Josh Donaldson is the biggest example that I can give. And also, even this season, Alex Verdugo. I thought it was really funny that the day after Glaber gets benched, Verdugo in the ninth inning hits a ground ball to shortstop, and the shortstop throws the ball basically in the Yankees dugout, and Verdugo was not running hard at all. If I think Spencer Horton was playing first base at the time. If the shortstop had thrown a ball, let's say like 5 feet off the line, and Horwitz could get the ball, I think Horwitz still had time to catch the ball and go back to first, and Verdugo would have been out.
Let's get to Verdugo later, because he's a big part of this conversation for me. So I think Verdugo needs his own time, because that's part of my issue with all of this. So let's get to Verdugo in a minute. Let's just focus on Glaber right now.
Yeah, so I know a lot of fans are upset with Glaber, have been upset with Glaber, whatever. He loses focus often. It's not new for him. Aaron Judge said afterwards, like, I know Glaber, I know this is not going to happen again. I would be surprised if it did not happen again with Glaber. That's just who he is. That's just the kind of player he is, and you live with it, and the Yankees have lived with it for as long as they have. When I asked Aaron Boone in the postgame press conference, essentially saying, like, you know, there have been numerous examples of this throughout your tenure, so why Glaber and why now? Because, again, there have been several instances in the past where a player has done this and they haven't gotten benched. And Boone really didn't answer the question. I'll read the quote. He said, everyone's going to make judgments on this guy, that guy. The reality is I have a ton of grace because a lot of people don't know the whole story on every situation and what guys are dealing with. I think it's one of the more overrated things, defining a player who plays hard or not. It is an important part of it, but we can go back and pull this one. Why didn't you pull on this one? The reality is those guys, including Glaber, play their asses off. I don't have any issue with that. I felt like in this moment, this time, I needed to do this. That's it. I've said everything I want to say, and I've been pretty clear. What's also interesting about the quote is he's essentially saying that this moment in particular rose to a level where he felt that Glaber needed to be benched, but yet he couldn't explain why Glaber, like this moment in particular, why Glaber needed to get benched. He also said he wasn't even sure if Glaber would have ended up on second if he ran hard out of the box. So it was underwhelming, Boone's answers. Like, you know, he made a public decision like that. He did it on purpose. You know, he could have easily pulled Glaber into the batting cages that are right outside their dugout. He could have pulled Glaber in there. He didn't have to make it a public display. And also, like, Boone knows, like, this is New York. Like, you're going to be asked questions about a player who was benched. Like, it's a big deal. Like, was Glaber the reason why the Yankees lost that game? No. Marcus Stroman was the reason why the Yankees lost that game. He was terrible, and he continues to not pitch well, and he's probably pitching himself out of the playoff rotation. But, you know, again, this is New York. It's it's a player who's had a history of this, and you're going to be asked questions. And it didn't seem like Aaron wanted to answer questions. I mean, ultimately, like, you know, the media is a conduit between the team and the fans. Like, the fans also want to know, like, why was Gleyber benched? It wasn't just because he has a history of this. I mean, like, this rose to a level where Boone felt that Gleyber needed to be benched, and he didn't answer the question, which is his right. Like, I'm not upset with him not answering the question. If he doesn't want to answer the question, that's on him. But, you know, if you make a public display, you should, as essentially the spokesman of the team, explain yourself, and he didn't do that. And I appreciated Gleyber being very honest with us and explaining how he felt about the situation, because, you know, ultimately his manager didn't. His manager took the different route. He didn't want to answer the questions. And Gleyber was very accountable, said sorry, said all the things that you would want to hear. And I appreciated his honesty.
I think everybody looks bad in this situation, including Aaron Boone. I think Gleyber definitely deserves a ton of blame and criticism for his lack of effort on that play. I'm a Gleyber supporter, but I'm not blind, and I feel like I'm fair and balanced when it comes to this stuff. He was totally in the wrong. I get getting caught up in the moment, but that's not a good look. It's bad optics and it's bad baseball play. Like, there's no defense for what Gleyber did in that inning. I did think that the send from Rojas was comically bad. Like, Gleyber Torres had no shot to score, and Rojas has a tendency to send guys who are not fast home when they have no shot. Like, he also has a history of doing that. But I think standing in the box, it was clear off the bat to me that it wasn't a home run. I thought it was going to, like, go down in the corner and that he was going to have a chance to get a double. So if I could see that on TV, then Gleyber should know that in the box. I mean, he sees it better than pretty much anybody else. So Gleyber deserves a ton of blame and criticism for that play. He didn't hustle. I also appreciate his accountability and acknowledgement that he shouldn't have done that. I don't know if he would have made it to second base, but like you said, he should have put himself in the position to make that decision once he got to first. So I want to be very clear here. Gleyber is in the wrong. Gleyber did not hustle, did not show the effort. So I want that to be very clear when I say the rest of, like, my feelings on this. I think Aaron Boone's handling of this was just as bad as Glaber's lack of effort. And I'm at the point now where I've had enough of, like, Aaron Boone playing this game with everybody. Now, this is not personal. I'm sure Aaron Boone is a very nice guy. Like, I don't want it to come across like I have some, like, ill will towards Aaron Boone, the human being. I don't. From everything that I've heard, he's a great guy, nice guy, good with people, all that stuff. So this is just strictly about, like, baseball and being a baseball manager for the New York Yankees, not personal. But, like, I've had enough, man. Like, you can't, like, cherry pick these moments and also not give an explanation for cherry picking it. He's very aware of what he did. It felt like performative to me because there's no justification that he provided to make that decision in that moment when this happens repeatedly with multiple players. Like, DJ LeMahieu did not run to first base in a big rivalry game against Boston, and he went out of his way to protect DJ LeMahieu. And it's like, if the standard is to play hard on every play to put yourselves in a position to win a baseball game, then the rules of punishment need to be uniform as well. Like, I don't understand why Gleyber's history played into that moment when this has happened with multiple players multiple times to establish their own history, and there are no consequences that come along with it. So I got into it with a bunch of people on Twitter about Gleyber's history, and it's like, how can you use the history excuse or reasoning when there's a history this year of multiple players not hustling? There are multiple offenders here with multiple instances of that taking place. Also, in some of those instances, it cost the Yankees runs in a closer game. That Boston game, they lost because two guys didn't hustle. It was a direct contribution to a loss to a rival who was playing well at the time, and you were having a spiral, and they just did not compete. So why did Volpe continue to play? Why did LeMahieu continue to play? Why didn't one of them not get benched? Why wasn't there a situation where they got pulled from the game? Why did they play the next day? Why did you defend DJ LeMahieu? I don't like, this is not really about Glaber to me. It's what you allow and when you choose to institute consequences and repercussions for a guy's performance or effort level. I don't understand. And then to have the nerve to not answer your question directly while the player that was punished was more forthcoming than the manager is embarrassing. Like, that can't happen. That's unacceptable. Who's running this? Why is the player more accountable than the manager? Why is he more forthcoming than the authoritative figure on the team on the field? Like, how am I supposed to take your authority seriously? And how am I supposed to take your authority seriously when Glaber is the five hitter the next day? He's in the middle of the lineup the next day. And even in your quote, that quote is ridiculous. I know you won't say it. I'll say it. That quote is ridiculous. What are you even saying? I don't understand. He plays his ass off, but you benched him for a lack of effort. You don't know. You think that the idea of someone playing hard or not playing hard is an overrated thing, yet you clearly benched him because of a lack of effort. You have multiple players who don't run hard. They just don't. Juan Soto does not always run hard out of the box. I know it's like sacrilegious to say that now, but like, he doesn't always run hard out of the box. I think there was a situation either yesterday or on Saturday where he didn't run hard out of the box. And then he had to, it was yesterday. He didn't run hard out of the box. And then he jammed his wrist in second base because he had to like pick it up. He doesn't do it all the time, but he's Juan Soto. So he gets a pass. He's earned a pass, but like, he does it. We spoke about Verdugo. I mean, we spoke about LeMahieu. Verdugo is the biggest culprit on the team. He's also their worst everyday player. Every day, this guy loafs to first base. Every day, every single day. He's on the Yankees because he had bad baseball character in the mind of Alex Cora and the Red Sox. His introductory press conference with the Yankees, half of it was spent defending himself. He's on the team because they didn't like his character. Boston celebrated. And he's brought that. So again, because this really bothered me when like people brought up Glaber's history. Alex Verdugo is the new guy on the team that they wanted. They wanted him after all that nonsense in Boston. He's the new guy. He hasn't played a full season yet. And he's doing the same thing. He's the new guy. Glaber's contributed to the Yankees. Glaber's busted his ass on multiple occasions. He's also loafed it and like has not put forth a full effort. Also, he's done both. Acknowledgement on both. But he's helped the Yankees way more than Alex Verdugo. Alex Verdugo's been terrible. He stinks. He's their worst everyday player now that DJ LeMahieu's not playing anymore or playing regularly. He's their worst everyday player. And not only does he get away with loafing it? And we brought this up a month ago with him. He's batting leadoff. The play with the error is embarrassing. Now, I don't know if this was brought up, but like, he didn't play yesterday and he's like going through things. He wasn't going through things on Saturday. So what happened on Sunday?
Yeah.
He obviously wasn't, he didn't hurt his legs because he wasn't running hard on Saturday. So what happened?
It was the first thought I had in my mind was Verdugo bench? I don't know. I mean, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you can definitely come to that conclusion. I thought it was interesting how Boone was answering those questions when we were asking about like why Verdugo wasn't in. He was like, yeah, I'm not getting into it. He's all right. But if he's beat up and all right are not the same thing. So I definitely thought it was interesting. He's after what happened the night before with Glaber, probably wasn't going to say that Verdugo got benched. I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to find out at some point. But I definitely thought it was interesting that Verdugo wasn't in, because he clearly was not hustling on that ball in the ninth inning. And also, you know, countless times throughout the season where he's just not hustling. I just thought it was funny. I thought it was a really funny moment, because literally the day before, you know, a teammate got benched and Verdugo was running at 25% speed down first base, and he gets bailed out because the ball was thrown, you know, past first base. And again, like you said, he has a history of this. He was benched last year. Alex Cora, one of Boone's, you know, closest friends in the big leagues, benched him. And obviously the Cora and Boone talked about Verdugo after, you know, he was traded to the Yankees. You know, Cora's not going to throw his players under the bus, wished them well, whatever. But, you know, one of the things that Boone was saying after the game was, you know, we hope this is a learning moment. I mean, couldn't you make the same argument for Verdugo? Like, the guy was benched last year and he's still doing this on a new team. Like, did he learn his, you know, his lesson? I don't know. I think it's all dumb. You know, I think the cherry picking is stupid. You know, Josh Donaldson did this in the playoffs. No consequences. He did it. There's montages on Twitter of Josh right. Donaldson flipping his bat, pimping singles, no consequences. But, you know, if we're to believe Boone at his word, you know, he may have been going through something that caused him not to run. So that is why he ended up continuing to play.
That's what it was.
He was going through suckitis. That's what Donaldson was battling.
He was washed and couldn't hit the ball over the fence anymore. And we couldn't, like, come to grips with it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we're talking about this at some point in the future, because it happens. And, you know, like you said, Juan Soto's done this several times where he's hit a ball to left center and it hasn't gone out. Again, if you're going to bench a player in the moment, is it because of performance reasons or is it actually because of effort reasons? Because if it's for effort reasons, then everyone should be benched. But there has to be something else at play here. And Boone is not going to say it. I don't know what's at play. Maybe he's talked with Glaber and said, you know, this is it. You do it again, you're benched. I don't know. They will never say if that happened or not. But again, Glaber was certainly at fault. It was inexcusable. You can't sit in the dirt and, you know, stay there for like 5 seconds before you decide to run. You just can't do that. But, you know, the Yankees took 2 of 3 from the Blue Jays. All is well in Yankee land. They've won 7 of 8 games. They're still right in it.
I think there's two separate things, though, because we're talking about, like, I don't want to use culture because that's overused and I don't think that that's like the right word here, but a standard. And who's to say that doesn't happen in the playoffs with one of these guys? You know what I mean? Like, to me, this is an issue that goes beyond Glaber. And I agree with you. Somebody's going to do it again between now and the end of the season. And
it literally happened
the day after. And there were, you know, we don't know for sure if there was a punishment with Verdugo. There could have been. We don't know. We weren't told. So we can't say definitively. But it's going to happen again. And as you mentioned, there's been moments like this in the playoffs in New York. Like, one of those moments with Josh Donaldson happened in Yankee Stadium. It didn't happen in Cleveland. It happened here. So, like, what happens and how do you handle that situation if it happens in the playoffs? Like, what happens if the play that happened with Verdugo and the error happens in the playoffs? What do you do then? Like, what's the standard there? How do you manage that? And you're going to have way more media asking you that question, and it's going to be a national story. It won't just be like a local story. It'll be a national story. Not, and hopefully that doesn't happen. And I would like to think that these guys that want to win a title, that have a chance to win a title, are going to give the ultimate effort when it matters the most. So I hope this doesn't happen, but it's happened enough where you can legitimately ask this question. When will this pop up again? How will Boone, the Yankees, and the team and teammates, players handle this situation? Because it's happened so much that you don't know when it's going to pop up again. We just feel confident that it will happen again. And it's like, how do you navigate this? And do guys respect your authority enough to feel like there would be repercussions if you were to be that culprit? Obviously, Alex Verdugo is one of those people that doesn't care because he did it the next day. So I don't know, like, sometimes I think we can make a bigger deal out of things than what they are, but they made it a big deal Friday night, and then it continued through the weekend. So, you know, it's just like, it's just a reflection of how the team has been managed with things like this since Boone has been here. And it's like really up and down. And it's like, it just feels random at times. And it's like, I just had a gut feeling about it. Well, there's no gut feeling with what you saw with effort. Like, we all know that that's unacceptable. We all had the same gut feeling. We all had the same gut reaction. It's not like, how is that a gut reaction when it's a universal response to the same thing that we all saw at the same time? You know what I mean? And it's like, it also just bothers me that there was no explanation to let us know, okay, this is the standard. This is what's acceptable. This is what's unacceptable. And this is the line, so that we all know, because you don't want to attack Glaber to the end of time if you don't have to. Some people will, because they just don't like Glaber. And I don't think it had anything to do with that play. They're just looking for another reason to dump on Glaber. Glaber is the whipping boy for some people. He's replaced Gary Sanchez. I'm not saying all, and I'm not saying that some of the criticism of Glaber isn't valid. It certainly is. But clearly there's a section of the Yankees fan base that hates Glaber and wants him out of here. And any chance they get, they're going to jump on it. But like, as the manager, I also think he has to be aware of that and establish a line to let people know, this is why he crossed the line. This is the line. So people can treat it appropriately. I also think he just opens the door for more people to just take liberties as to how they should treat or react to anything that Glaber does while he's still a Yankee. You know, I think that there's a larger responsibility here as the face of the team to kind of curtail reactions, because ultimately it could impact your player's performance and his well-being, attitude, all of those things that impact winning. So I don't know. I just felt like Glaber certainly is the main culprit here, but the way that it was handled, I think Boone dropped the ball as well. And it brings into question his authority, because we just saw it. We saw it the next day where the new guy didn't care. Like, it had no impact on him whatsoever. He didn't think twice about Glaber getting benched. He was like, I'm just not going to run down to first base. It's basically what happened.
No, that's exactly what happened. The one final point I wanted to make with Glaber is that he has said before that he does respond well to hard coaching. Like, that's one thing that he enjoyed with Carlos Mendoza when he was the bench coach, because Mendoza was basically like the tough guy who on the coaching staff, if you needed to yell at someone, it was going to be Mendoza. And Glaber did respond well when, you know, Mendoza would get on him. And also, after Glaber was benched in June, like, he did end up performing well. Like, after he got back in the lineup, like, he's been one of their better hitters. Like, outside of Judge, Soto, and Austin Wells, Glaber's been right there. And, you know, he has performed since the benching. So maybe that is part of this. Like, maybe Boone knows that Glaber's not going to wilt. Like, he has the capacity to perform well, even though he was publicly embarrassed. So maybe that is part of the thinking, but again, I'm just guessing because Boone didn't say one way or the other, which it would be helpful if he did, because we wouldn't have to guess on these situations. But, you know, again, it's his right. He doesn't want to answer the questions. He doesn't have to. No one's, you know, holding him to the fire to answer the questions. It is ultimately his right. But it would be nice to have some sort of insight into all of these questions that we still have.
I agree. So you mentioned a bunch of guys starting to play well, and it leads to a question that we have that we will ask and answer right after this break. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. We just went through the whole Glaber saga. We're going to put that in the rear view now and ask a very important question. Chris, are the Yankees back?
I think so. You know, I think with the addition of Jazz to the lineup, you know, he didn't play well in the Blue Jay series. But you just look at the lineup now and you have, you know, obviously Judge and Soto. Austin Wells has been really good. One of the best catchers, not only in the American League, but all of baseball, like how he's been behind the plate and his bat has been really good. Anthony Volpe is, you know, since the All-Star break, it has looked like the Volpe that we expected coming into the season. You know, his power has been there. His ability to just hit the ball hard has been there since the All-Star break. Very encouraging to see. Carlos Rodon seems to have figured some stuff out. You know, I think it's now three consecutive outings where he's been good. You know, he kind of got burned a little bit at the end of his outing on Saturday. Gives up three runs. You know, Alejandro Kirk had a bloop single when Jake Cousins came in. So it made his line look a little worse than it ultimately was. I thought he was good on Saturday, even though he gave up three runs. Luis Gil has looked good. You know, there's still some question marks with obviously Marcus Stroman, who I touched on before. You know, if the playoffs are starting this week, I don't know how you have that guy in your playoff rotation. You know, still have concerns about Nestor and how he's going to look moving forward. The bullpen has performed pretty solidly. Mark Leiter Jr., who they obviously got from the Cubs, has come in and pitched in some really big spots already. Good to see, like, someone coming out of the bullpen and getting strikeouts. Yep. You know, he had a couple of really big strikeouts in Sunday's game. You know, that game's tight, comes in and does his job. Even Eniel De Los Santos has come in and you know, pitched solidly. It's obviously, I talked about it when I was in Philadelphia, but it was clear to me just like looking at like the numbers that the Yankees would have him throw his fastball less because it was just getting hit hard in San Diego. He's been throwing his fastball less in a couple of outings that he's made with the Yankees. He's been throwing his slider more, which had good results. I just don't get like what teams are looking at. Like, why didn't the Padres like know this? Like, why did they have De Los Santos throw his slider more? I don't get what teams are looking at. Like, I'm not in Major League Baseball, but I can see the numbers and it's like, oh yeah, like that's common sense. Like he should stop throwing this garbage pitch more often, less often. Like, I don't understand. These guys are getting paid to make these decisions. And I'm like, the Padres could certainly win the World Series. Like, I think they're now in that category of teams that could win the World Series. Like, they have a really good pitching staff. If they can hit and their guys step up, I wouldn't be surprised if the Padres are in the World Series. Like, I think they're a good team. But, you know, but this particular instance, it's like, I looked at the numbers for 2 seconds. I'm not watching De Los Santos pitch every day. Like, you see the numbers and it's very clear, throw the slider more. So that's what he's been doing and he's had success so far.
I think some organizations are just like, they just have their philosophies and they just stick to it and kind of like go with it. It just seems like some organizations have a profile and like don't adjust off the profile, which I think is one reason why Matt Blake is as successful as he is, because they clearly have like a type, but they're also willing to like adjust that for certain pitchers or certain, certain pitchers that I think they bring in an inventory or guys that generally fit the criteria that they want. But once they have them, then they go off of like what's actually working once they have them in their like program, which I think is different from a lot of organizations. And I think some of the organizations that you look at where they are successful, they kind of do those things. Like, I feel like Cleveland does that pretty well. I think in San Diego might not be one of those teams. They're just going to bring in guys that fit what they're looking for, and you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it, you know?
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. You know, obviously the Yankees traded for De Los Santos for a reason, even though he had poor results. I think he was giving up like almost 2.5 homers per 9 innings with the Padres. And it's like, you see that on paper and it's like, why would the Yankees trade for this guy? But, you know, so far he's looked good. Leiter has looked good.
You know, what's interesting. Somebody asked this question. I was thinking it, but somebody actually like brought it up. Who's the last pitcher that the Yankees had in recent times that their most effective pitch was a splitter? Was it?
Yeah. They usually don't go after guys who have splitters as their primary pitch.
Right.
It's, I mean, especially in like this iteration, it's been obviously sliders and sinkers.
I mean, I can't remember anybody Blake. Certainly not under Blake.
Certainly not under Blake. Yeah. I can't think of anybody who, their primary pitch was a splitter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting.
I'd have to look into it.
Yeah. It's interesting that they targeted him and he has a pitch that like they don't feature with their staff.
And they also don't teach it on the lower levels.
Right.
You know, they usually draft pitchers or sign pitchers and assign them to the minor leagues, and they, you know, teach them the slider, but which they call like the whirly, you know, or the sinker. But splitter is not a pitch that they usually target or teach. So it is interesting that, you know, that Leiter obviously was one of their top targets, and that's a pitch that they generally speaking don't emphasize. But he's looked solid since coming over from Chicago, and you know, you can see like a framework of what the bullpen could look like in October. You know, you have in you know, if you need more than 3 outs, let's say like you need 5 outs, you can have Luke Weaver come in right after the starting pitcher in like the 6th inning, have him go 5, have the starting pitcher go like 5 or 6, bring in Weaver, then Canely, then Leiter, and then Holmes. Like we're seeing like the framework of what the bullpen could look like in big spots in October.
And then you have guys like Tonkin and maybe Hamilton and De Los Santos, like just to get a couple outs if you need them. Like if something doesn't go according to plan, like you still have enough guys that can, you know, get an out when you need it. That might not be like in the like plan A group.
I would definitely have those guys in like plan B for sure. Plan A is Holmes, Leiter, Weaver, and Canely at this point. And then everybody else falls behind them. But
and the important thing too is they have righties that can get lefties out, because they don't really have a – do we even have a lefty now?
Tim Hill.
Oh, right. I forgot Tim Hill. So, yeah, you have like one lefty left, but you have a couple guys that can get righties and lefties out, so that helps.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a big deal. Like, would it be ideal to have another left-handed reliever? Yeah, sure.
Oh, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, like, I know people were like, why didn't Cashman target left-handed pitchers? And, you know, Canely is really good against lefties because of his changeup. Mark Leiter is also someone who can get lefties out. So I personally don't think it's that big of a deal that they only have one true left-handed pitcher, just because of the fact, like, they do have guys who can get left-handed hitters out. And that's important if they do end up facing Baltimore at some point in the playoffs, because, you know, they have a lot of good left-handed hitters. They've built their team because, you know, the stupid wall in left field. Right. You know, they've prioritized getting lefties in their lineup. So that's one thing to note if they do end up playing Baltimore in the playoffs, is, you know, they do have really good lefties. But Leiter and Kainley happen to be two of their better overall relievers, so you hope that neutralizes it a little bit. But, you know, in the ideal sense, you have true left-handed hitters true left-handed pitchers who are really good against lefties, but the Yankees don't have that. We'll see if it bites them. As of now, I don't think it's a big deal.
I don't think it's a big deal either.
They also have Scott Efros in the minors. If Scott can figure out what he's, you know, coming back from off of two major injuries, back surgery and Tommy John, like, if he can get back to the level, that's another right-handed pitcher who excels at getting lefties out. So we'll see if it ends up biting them. But as of now, I'm not really concerned about that aspect of the bullpen.
Yeah, so I'm going to say something that a couple people might not be happy to hear, but I think Brian Cashman, his trade acquisitions have resuscitated the season. I mean, I thought every move he made was a good one, and they're impacting the team right now. I think Jazz Chisholm, even though he didn't have the best series against the Blue Jays, I think he would have had like a big hit yesterday, but he got robbed a little bit. But he still made an impact with that double steal with Volpe when in the inning where they tied it up. Mm-hmm. You know, his athleticism has definitely helped. His athleticism has certainly saved them at third base.
Yep.
So even if offensively he didn't have the best series, I just feel like him being able to play third base has helped a lot. And he's playing a very deep third base and is still able to make plays, which I think is like pretty significant. It's a small detail in like the grand scheme of things, but his athleticism and ability to play a deep third base and still make plays is like helping them out big time now. So I think he's made a big impact. We've talked about Leiter and De Los Santos. You know, we talked about this multiple times on previous episodes that the trade deadline was really going to be the line of demarcation for a lot of teams. And it feels like the Yankees are on the plus side of that. It's clearly changed the energy, but also just like the actual on-field playing performance has elevated itself. They don't have to worry about third base right now. They have another bat in the lineup who's made an impact already, helped them win games, certainly helped them win the Philly series. Leiter has been great. De Los Santos is contributing and is now like somebody that could be in the mix. I think he's going to get even better the longer he's here and they start really figuring out like what his strengths are and like leaning into them. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I said that when they got him, I thought that he could be like a nice piece for them. But yeah, I mean, the trade deadline, the Yankees are definitely one of those teams that took advantage of it. Even if they didn't get like a huge haul just in terms of quantity, the quality of it has definitely shown itself. I think, you know, we talked about San Diego. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not sure about Baltimore yet. They brought in a lot of guys, but like Rodgers was terrible against Cleveland. I know Jimenez had like a couple hits. And it looks like he's going to be like in a platoon situation. So maybe that helps out. Eflin was good against Toronto, but as we saw, Toronto's not that good. So we'll see. But Eflin's a good pitcher. So I guess Baltimore also is on the plus side of that. But certainly the Yankees have been able to reap the benefits of the trade deadline so far. And it's definitely contributed to this upturn for them.
I mean, I wrote after the day after the trade deadline that I thought Cashman did well. Like, obviously, everybody's freaking out because they didn't get, you know, seven stars at the trade deadline. But, like, I thought the moves he made sense. Like, you could see how they could project into October, which like all this is about October. Ultimately, the Yankees are going to be in the playoffs, whether they win the division or their wild card, they have a spot. So everything's really just focused on October. Like you could see these guys having impacts in October, and that's what it's all about. Ultimately, no, personally, like if I'm Brian Cashman, I do think I would have traded for Jack Flaherty.
Oh, I absolutely would have traded for Jack Flaherty.
I know the risks. I know that's why the Yankees ended up pulling out. They were concerned about the back. But ultimately, it's 3 months where he's under contract. He's a free agent. So even if it didn't work out, it's not like they are having to trade Spencer Jones, Jason Dominguez, Roderick Arias, all those guys for someone who, you know, is under control for 5 years. It's just 3 months. Like maybe the Tigers were asking for players who they just didn't feel like the Yankees didn't feel was worth the risk. But again, like we've talked about this since December when the Yankees traded for Juan Soto, like this is a really critical year and you have to do everything you can to put yourself in the best possible spot to win the World Series. And I do think that having Flaherty could have certainly improved their chances of winning the title, because they do have some risks in the starting rotation right now. And we didn't even talk about Gerrit Cole, who
right
hasn't looked all that good. Truthfully,
Okay. I have a question. I know that people were saying that, like, as the game went on yesterday, that he looked better. I don't think he looked that good yesterday. I mean, I thought he was better than the first couple of innings, but he was bad in the first couple of innings. And, you know, there wasn't much room to go, like, below that, you know, minus an implosion. But, I mean, I wasn't as encouraged by that start as other people seem to be, given, like, I guess how it ended. But I don't know. I still have concerns about Cole.
Yeah, I mean, like, he certainly bounced back after the second inning. Was it, like, vintage Cole? Absolutely not. You know, I still think his command is off. He's getting hit hard. And the Blue Jays lineup is dreadful. Right. And they were squaring him up. I think he's only made 8 starts now. So it is still relatively early. And, you know, like we were saying with Aaron Judge back in April, I'm going to give Judge and Cole the benefit of the doubt that they will end up figuring it out. I think Cole is one of the smartest pitchers, not even pitchers, players in the game. I assume he will look like Gerrit Cole at some point. As of now, he hasn't. So he is a little bit of a question mark, but just given his track record, given how smart he is, given how diligently he works of figuring out ways to, you know, beat opposing teams, like I still believe that he will look like Cole at some point. But one issue that the Yankees are facing is if Cole is going to look like a diminished version of himself for the rest of the year, I don't know if they can win the World Series. I think Cole is probably, hell, I mean, you can even make an argument that he's more important than Aaron Judge just because of how important pitching is in the playoffs. And if he's going to look like a diminished version of himself, like I don't know if the Yankees can win the title if he doesn't look like himself. And that's why I think making the risk for Flaherty was worth it because of how well he has pitched this year. Like he's unquestionably been one of the top 7 pitchers in the sport this year. And adding that player to your roster gives you a better opportunity of winning.
Yeah. And he was good against Oakland in his first start with the Dodgers. So I
could look good against Oakland though. So I don't know if that means anything.
I don't know. They have some players on that team. I mean, they're not like totally, they're not the White Sox.
Yeah, they're not the White Sox. I mean, Brent Rooker's been one of the best hitters, and Lawrence Butler has been looking like Barry Bonds.
Yeah, and I also think the A's beat them one of those games too.
Yes,
they did. The difference between Cole and Judge, like April Judge and Cole, is that there was an injury with Cole, and he has been playing catch up the entire time. There wasn't an injury with Judge. I mean, I know that there was like that little moment in spring training where he missed some time, but that wasn't like significant, like Cole's injury. And it just feels like he's been playing catch up the entire season. And then he had this body fatigue, stomach bug thing that kind of like knocked him right back. It's just, I think I'll feel better about it if we go into October and he's just had a consistent run of starts. Like every 5 days he's there, he can start to get into a routine. He can start getting, get some momentum going, and there are like no more interruptions. You know, like the first couple of starts, he was finding himself, which totally makes sense. He probably came back a little too soon. Then he had like one or two good starts where he looked like Cole. And then he had like a bad start again. And then he was fatigued and the stomach thing. And he comes back yesterday. And I thought he was decent for his standards. So I think I'll feel better about Cole if he can just get a nice run of starts, you know, and like really just no interruptions, no things that like physically are getting in the way. And he could just go out, figure out command stuff, like work on, you know, hopefully his stuff is crisper. I don't think his stuff was great yesterday, despite what Boone said. Because they're not going to say, yeah, stuff looked terrible or whatever. Garrett Cole, they're not going to say that publicly. So I don't think it's at the Garrett Cole level. I think if other normal human being pitchers had that stuff, you'd be like, oh, yeah, this stuff was good. But like for Cole, obviously there's another level to it. So I'm going by his standards, or, you know, what he's presented to us for so many years. I don't think he's there yet. But I'm not like overly concerned. I'm not like, oh my God, like this is like a big issue. It would just be nice to see him get a good run of starts going into October so he can establish himself again, feel comfortable, feel confident, and the performances back that up. And then if you have that, then I feel like the Yankees are fine on that end. Then he could just go out and pitch and be their ace in October. But I think, right, just speaking on August 5th with all these kind of like up and down performances and some physical stuff popping up, it's just, there's just a little bit of uncertainty and a lack of consistency right now that I think needs to be addressed as the season goes on. So I think that's probably a better way for me to describe it rather than just like outright concern. It's just an interest in seeing consistency both physically for him and then just like performance wise to just be like, okay, Garrett Cole is back. He can lead the staff and kind of take care of some of the issues that are happening in, on the back end of the rotation. And I certainly think right now Stroman has no shot of being in the playoff rotation. He's their worst starter. I mean, I don't see what the case would be for anyone to say he deserves a spot in the playoffs. Like I don't even know if he would make the roster. Like he's not going to pitch out of the bullpen, and I don't think he's on the rotation. Right now, to me, is does he have a spot on the playoff roster to even contribute? I mean, he's been that bad. He's that unreliable. And I don't think you can, in 2024, go into a playoff series relying on a guy who throws 90 miles per hour that is solely dependent on hitting the corners. Like, not just because it's a command performance thing, but I don't trust these umpires. Like, you really have to, like, get the right guy behind the plate to help him out. If you have like who we saw yesterday, Tripp, he's going to get smoked. Like, and it might not even be like all Stroman's fault, but he's not going to get the corners. I mean that strike zone was like, it was all over the place. You know what I mean? So if like you have to consider those things, then, and you just have bad performance, like I don't see where Stroman fits on the playoff roster, let alone the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, if Stroman's not in the rotation, he's off the roster.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't profile as someone who, you know, their stuff would look better coming out of the bullpen. Like, it's just simple. If he's not going to be one of your playoff starters, he's not on the team. Like, you can put Nestor in the bullpen if that's what right. You wanted. You know, he's a lefty, crafty lefty. You know, he has he can hit his spots. So like if they wanted another left-handed pitcher, like sure, like that certainly can make sense. But Stroman, like the only way he's on the playoff roster is if the Yankees say he's starting one of the games. Otherwise, he's off the team.
Right.
And as of now, like he should not be on the playoff roster.
No.
But it is August 5th. Maybe he figures something out. I don't have much confidence in that. I know the Yankees obviously are saying, yeah, like we believe he's going to figure it out. I don't know. Like all of the numbers would suggest that this is what he is at this point in the season. It's August 5th. He's not going to pitch again until Thursday's game against the Angels. If he puts up another dud against the Angels, like, I mean, I'm certainly going to have to write that this guy just doesn't have a future in October for the Yankees.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
like it's probably already at that point. Like this has been going on for so long now. And even when he was like pitching relatively well, like there was still some troubling signs. Like he's been one of the best ground ball pitchers since he came into the league. He has the lowest ground ball rate of his career. He's losing velocity, and he already doesn't have great velocity as is. He's losing more of that. His release height, like where he ends up throwing the ball, is getting lower. So maybe there's some fatigue at play with Stroman. Usually, like when your release point is lower or is inconsistent, it's usually a sign that you're just not 100%. That's what happened with Luis Gil. They straightened that out, and now he's back in line. Maybe Stroman is due for, you know, a 15-day IL, let him rest a little bit, and maybe he looks good after that. Because as of now, like if this is him at 100%, if that's what, you know, he's saying, like he said after the game on Friday, like he's good, he doesn't feel anything. Like if this is him at his best, like there's no chance he's going to be with the team in October.
Yeah, nah.
And what sucks for the Yankees too is like he is guaranteed at $18 million next year. Right. And obviously no one's trading for Stroman at that number. So the Yankees are stuck with him for next season. He has a fully guaranteed deal.
Yeah, I mean, I was for the deal when it happened, but I didn't think that his stuff was going to fall off like that. I mean, I thought the second half drop last year was because of the hip. And I know that that was a major contributor. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was like, okay, he's healthy. He'll bounce back. But like, I didn't know that his velocity was going to be that low. I didn't know that he had to be like this, like super crafty righty. You know, there was just some things that he's been doing this year that I wasn't expecting. And it just hasn't worked out so far. I mean,
he was throwing 88 on Friday.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
88 to major leaguers. Like they're licking their lips. I don't care like how crafty you are. Like if you're throwing 88, I'm sorry, like you're going to get tagged.
Yeah.
And it's a problem that he is losing this much velocity and he also can't find his spots. Like there were so many pitches that he had on Friday where like his slurve or sinker was right down the middle. And at 88 miles an hour, any major leaguer is going to square that up and send it over the fence or send it down the line or the gaps at 115 miles an hour. Like they love that. So if he can't hit his spots while also losing velocity, yeah, I mean, like I don't see a scenario where he is pitching in a game 3 or 4 in the ALCS. Like I can't see that.
Yeah, I agree. But with that said, the Yankees are playing much better. They've won their last 3 series. It seems like the Boston series might have been the turning point for them, or certainly the Philly series. So, I mean, I guess we're at the point now where we're getting confident in saying, yeah, the Yankees might have turned the corner that Aaron Boone was talking about. So, yeah, that's a great sign. I think that there are still question marks, but the question marks are going to be there the rest of the year. There's no way to really address them at this point and just have to hope that guys keep playing well. But, you know, we've talked about them being like one of the handful of teams that have a legitimate title shot, and it was looking murky for a while. But to me, the trade deadline like really reset them and put them back on the right course, which is also something that we mentioned, that the trade deadline was going to be a very important part of the season for them. And so far they took full advantage of it. So we'll go to this break. We'll come back with the mailbag and then we'll wrap it up. And we're back. It's mailbag time. Let's jump right into it. We have a bunch of them. Thank you for the questions. Brian Restuccia, I hope all is well. Looking forward to your perspective on this question or these questions. It's apparent that Verdugo is struggling with no signs of him turning it around. Also, the lack of hustle is a head scratcher. It's not a head scratcher for Alex Verdugo. With that said, how soon do you think the Yankees will call up Jason Dominguez? We're back to the Jason questions. It's great. Do they wait until September call-ups? Also, if he does get up here and performs well, is he on the playoff roster? I know you wrote about Jason, mm-hmm.
I asked Brian Cashman when he spoke with us the day after the trade deadline, just like what the plan is. Like reading into his answer to my question, it definitely seems like they are waiting it out. And it also should be noted that Dominguez, since returning from his oblique injury, hasn't performed well yet. He's had a couple moments, but overall, like he just hasn't hit well just yet. But I do believe that one of the reasons why I wouldn't expect Dominguez up until rosters expand, or, you know, obviously that goes out of the window if Verdugo gets hurt or Stanton gets hurt again. But if they don't need him, I do think that they'll wait until rosters expand. And one of the biggest reasons for that is Jason Dominguez has 31 career at-bats. If he gets to 130 at-bats, his rookie status goes away. And that's important because going into 2025, like you expect or have a feeling at least that Dominguez will be on the opening day roster next season. He might be the team starting left fielder or center fielder, depending on what they do with Aaron Judge. You know, Judge has played a little bit of left field this year. I personally don't think he's looked that great in left field, truthfully. But Dominguez is a center fielder. He has more range than Judge, so he could play either of those positions. I don't expect Alex Verdugo to be back next season, mainly because they're trying to get Juan Soto and they're going to, you know, put every dollar and resource into signing him. And if they do sign him, then I expect costs will be lowered around that move. And one of the ways to do that is by having Jason Dominguez on the opening day roster next year. Now, if Dominguez is on the roster and he's still considered a rookie, let's say Dominguez wins Rookie of the Year next year, the Yankees get another draft pick at the end of the first round, which is, you know, certainly meaningful. The Diamondbacks and the Orioles both had extra draft picks this year because Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson were Rookie of the Years. And one of the ways to get that extra first round pick is the player winning Rookie of the Year has to be a top 100 prospect on two of three major publications, MLB Pipeline, ESPN, and Baseball America. Dominguez obviously is a top 100 prospect. So the Yankees could keep his rookie status going into 2025. Also, they can delay his free agency another year, which is also important. Like, general managers don't only think about like the current year they're in. General managers are also thinking several years into the future. And obviously Dominguez is an important part of that. So they're going to do what it takes to not only, you know, see what they have in Verdugo and Stanton, but they're also thinking about several years into the future. I had a conversation with the former Hawks GM when I was covering the Atlanta Hawks. And he said, like, if we win a championship, that's cool. But, like, I'm thinking about 2028 and, you know, and beyond. Like, it's hard to live in the moment sometimes as a general manager, because part of the job is looking into the future. So to answer your question, like, I still think that Dominguez coming up out of need is probably not going to happen until rosters expand. I just don't see him coming up, especially with, like, him being a rookie in 2025. I do think it's important that they have that rookie status, just based off what I said. Like, if he's the starting left fielder or center fielder, like, he certainly immediately becomes one of the prohibitive favorites of winning Rookie of the Year, and that helps the Yankees organizationally.
Yeah, and I think if he's on the roster in September, there's a strong chance, unless he just totally bombs, that he'll be on the playoff roster.
Yeah, 100%. I think as of now, Dominguez is one of the best position players that the Yankees have. And even if he starts or doesn't start, like, he's still going to be on the playoff roster if he looks competent.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's going to start, but you still have to have him on the roster because he is a good player who could help in certain situations.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Joshua Fintler, do you see them trying to stretch Luke Weaver back to being a starter next season like they did Michael King last year? Or will his calling card just be as a fireman reliever, 7th, 8th inning guy?
Too early to say. I have no idea. Weaver's having the best year of his career in this role. Unlike Michael King, Michael King was always talking about wanting to become a starter again. That hasn't come out of Weaver's mouth this year. He's enjoying the success he's had. So unless, like, Weaver is, like, pushing to be in the starting rotation next year, I would expect him to still be in this role. But I don't know. Like, it's still very early. I can't really answer this question.
Yeah, I think we'll worry about that next year. The OG, Stephen Tidings, the Views from 314 Feet OG and co-founder, Stephen Tidings. After the deadline, I always begin to think about the guys internally who can help plug holes. Who are the guys in AAA, or I guess AA, that have a realistic shot of being a contributor, even if it's just in September? Beyond Jason and Will Warren, is there someone you see as a potential impact player? If no, what potential role could Warren play, since we discuss Jason all the time? Love the pod as always. Shout out to Steven.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of pitchers who, you know, could find their way into the bullpen, especially if guys go down or, you know, they're just balling out in AAA and they think there's something there. You know, they option Nick Birdie to AAA, you know, with his stuff. Like, he can certainly be a factor at some point for the Yankees in October. Wouldn't be surprised about that. We talked about Scott Efros, you know, if he can look like himself prior to the injuries, maybe he's a candidate. Victor Gonzalez, who they DFA'd, like, he's still in AAA. Like, if they,
Forgot he's still in the organization.
He's still there. If they feel like they need a lefty reliever, you know, he's an option. Outside of that, like, I don't see any position players helping. Like, Oswald Peraza's been hot lately, but
they don't care.
The Yankees have shown you, like, what they believe Oswald Peraza is at this point. So I wouldn't expect him. Bibas, maybe if, you know, Glaber goes down with an injury, but, you know, that's only in, like, extreme cases. Like, the pitchers are really the only ones who I can see. As for Warren, I wouldn't be surprised, like, if the Yankees in September want Luis Gil as fresh as possible. Like, they can certainly scale his workload back and have Warren make spot starts. That's certainly an option, because I suspect that Warren will be in strong consideration of being the pitcher who gets called up in September, just to see what's there. maybe they have another bullpen arm, but, you know, it would make a little sense to see what Warren has just because, you know, he could be someone who comes out of the bullpen and gives you multiple innings. I don't know. But yeah, I do think that him making spot starts in September, you certainly can't rule that out, especially with Luis Gil. We've been talking about Gil's workload since spring training. That is one way to lessen the workload that he'll have when rosters expand, if they wanted to use Warren.
Jenny Fry, if the postseason started tomorrow, what would your lineup look like? Who's in the outfield? Who's the DH? What's the infield configuration with DJ and Rice? If I had to make the lineup, I would have Glaber, Soto, Judge, Wells, Stanton, Rice, Jazz, Verdugo, Volpe. That leaves Grish, DJ, and Cabrera coming off the bench. Thoughts, love the pod, love the Yankees. Seem to be back on track even more, though. Yeah, I mean, that looks like mine. I mean, my only thing is Verdugo and Jason. If Jason's on the team, I would replace Verdugo. I don't think anybody's surprised by me saying that. But I think most people would agree. I mean, if it's between Jason and Verdugo, I think 99.9% of people will pick Jason. I don't know about that specific order. I don't think that would be my order. I would have Jazz a little higher, and also depending on what Jason's doing, if he's playing. But yeah, I mean, I think the names are right outside of Verdugo.
Yeah, I can't give an order off the top of my head just because a lot of it is also matchup dependent. Like, I don't know in this, you know, hypothetical who the Yankees are playing, what the pitcher, like their splits are and all that stuff. So I think the names are correct. I would certainly have Rice over DJ at first base. You know, I just think Rice is the better player. He hasn't had good results, but, you know, his BABIP is extremely low. It's the same thing like we were talking about Austin Wells, honestly, in April. Wells was hitting the ball very well. It was very apparent that when luck started going his way, that Wells would see results. Like, I still think Rice is making really good decisions. He hits the ball hard. Like, I'm not worried about Rice at this time. Like, I still think, like, the potential is certainly there. So I would have Rice over LeMahieu. And, you know, if Verdugo is still a below average hitter, good defender, like I think you can get that with Dominguez, honestly. And the potential of Dominguez doing something great is higher than Verdugo's, in my opinion. So I would also go with Dominguez over Verdugo, just because if Verdugo is going to be like a 85 to 90 WRC plus and provide good defense, like I think you can get that with Dominguez. And 100%. Dominguez also offers the power threat that Verdugo just doesn't have. And
he's a switch hitter.
He's a switch hitter. He brings speed. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer in my opinion that I would have Dominguez over Verdugo, but we're still 2 months out from this, so we'll see. But as of now, that's what I would do. I would have Dominguez over Verdugo, even if Dominguez is not hitting as well as he did last season. Like, I still think like the potential that he brings is higher than Verdugo's.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like a no-brainer. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Randy Cadenhead, the future of Jose Trevino and others heading into 2025 and the Laz Diaz-led umpiring crew. How does MLB even tolerate such performance? Do they even review and evaluate them?
Yes, they evaluate them, and mainly like in the regular season, there's just nothing that they're going to do. But in the playoffs, as you know, there aren't many games at that point, and the worst umpires just don't get those assignments. That's how it works out, like in those moments. Not to say like all the umpires in the playoffs are good, but the worst performing ones don't get those assignments. Like, you won't see Diaz in the World Series.
No, and let's hope we don't see.
I can guarantee that.
Let's hope we don't see Trip Gibson in the playoffs, period. I mean that was a joke. And we might need to start evaluating the evaluators because, I mean, umpiring is at an all-time low, in my opinion. But everybody knows that. If you listen to the podcast, you know how I feel about umpires. But it's bad. It's bad. It's like impacting games way more than it should. You're always going to have the human element, but I mean, come on. Yesterday was a joke for both sides.
Yeah,
for
it both was sides. Bad. It was really on. Bad.
You can't do that. I don't know if it was yesterday or I think it was yesterday. It might have happened twice with George Springer, where George Springer got hosed on two horrible calls, and it might have been one in the last two games. But like, it was on both sides, and it doesn't even out, and it doesn't even matter if it evens out. You're impacting that moment. You can't get that moment back. Mm-hmm. You know, so like the whole like evens out thing, yeah, that might be a thing, but that doesn't like change the moment where it actually took place and it's like influence on how the rest of the game goes. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just like the judge walked yesterday. He saw six balls and then he strikes out. You know, it's like the Springer at bat was ridiculous. I mean, it's just bad. It's got to stop, man. Like, it's enough.
Getting back to the question now.
Yeah. that was one of the questions.
Yeah, that was. About Jose Trevino, you know, he's under team control for next season and then becomes a free agent in 26. At this point, I think Austin Wells is clearly the number one catcher on the Yankees. I think Trevino got supplanted with this injury. Wells took the opportunity and has performed very well. Now, again, going back to what I was saying about Soto, the Yankees want Soto. Like, they want to give him all the money. And I still think that the only way Soto is not a Yankee for 25 and beyond is if he just doesn't want to play for the Yankees. I think they will be, you know, one of the teams that offers the most money. You know, I think the Mets certainly have the capability of offering the most, but I do think the Yankees will be right there with the Mets, whatever the number comes out to. One of the ways that they can save a couple million dollars is by either trading Trevino or non-tendering him. They probably won't non-tender him just because, like, he does have value. He is one of the best defensive catchers in the league. And if they wanted to trade him, I do think that plenty of teams would like to have Jose Trevino. Like, as of now, like, just based off what I said with them trying to save money, it wouldn't surprise me if Trevino is not with the Yankees next season. They could have Carlos Narvaez be the backup catcher or any other catcher that's around who is cheaper than Trevino will be. Trevino's making 2.73 this year. His arbitration number for next season will probably be somewhere 3.1, 3.2. You know, it's a decent money for sure. And if the Yankees wanted to save that, I do think that he would have a lot of trade interest around the league. You know, there's just not that – there aren't many good catchers, and Trevino is one of them. So I do think that they could get something if they did try to trade Trevino next year. Like, but if I was betting on it, I would say Trevino is not with the Yankees in 2025.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Just got to hope that Narvaez or somebody else kind of fill up that spot. I think we should talk about this in the next podcast, but – the young guys have really made an impact now. You know, like, there's been this whole thing, you know, the Yankees can't develop young guys, and that's clearly not the case. I mean, that's just an incorrect statement for multiple players now. And I'm amazed, quite honestly, at how Austin Wells has taken on this workload. I mean, he I know they give him a day, like, every once in a while, but he's playing a lot now. Like, he's not... he's not like two or three days and then sit. Like it feels like he's in the lineup every day, unless you have a day game after a night game. I mean, he's like really taken that on and is succeeded in doing
it. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he might win rookie of the year, honestly.
He's certainly in the conversation.
Yeah. He's put himself in the conversation. I mean, I think at this point it's like four guys and Mason Miller has tailed off because he's injured. Colton Cowser, Orioles left fielder, Luis Gil, and Austin Wells. Like, I think that's the top three right now.
Also want to point out that by F-War, he and Adley Rutschman are of the same value, and he's played far less than Adley. So, I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure there are no Orioles fans that listen to this, but your boy has some competition from Austin Wells.
Yeah, so. Wells has been a huge bright spot for the Yankees.
Yeah. Hal Gordon. Crazy what a deadline can do to effectively save a season. My last email aged like milk, and I cannot be happier. The vibes have truly shifted as the Yankees no longer look like an incompetent team. Thank you, Brian Cashman. I'm still annoyed about Flaherty, though. We still can't go a game without a base-running blunder or an error fielding the ball, but I'd rather shed the Yankees can't fight back part of the identity instead of the Boone's team as no fundies part, if I could choose. My question is about September reinforcements and how likely these potential call-ups will be effective. F. Ross, Hamilton, Warren, a returning Clark, I forgot about Clark, and the Martian. Who are they likely to replace on the team if there aren't enough spots for them?
Yeah, I mean, like, you just never know, like, how effective these guys are. Like, there's no – the Yankees don't know how effective these guys will be. You know, you just don't know until, like, they're in major league games. Like, they obviously are telling you that they don't think Scott Efros will be effective if he was with the major league team because he's in AAA. So they don't think he's effective right now. As for Hamilton, Hamilton is still a ways away. You know, he didn't have a timetable. Boone didn't have a timetable on Hamilton when we asked about him, I believe Saturday. You know, he may not even be with the postseason roster at this point. Like, it doesn't seem like he's close. Clark is supposed to throw his first live batting practice, I believe, Tuesday. So when you are listening to this, Clark is supposed to throw a bullpen today. You know, usually a starting pitcher will throw two or three, and then they'll start a rehab assignment after that. So probably best case scenario, late August or September. And that actually, I didn't think about this, but when rosters expand, Clark Schmidt may be the call to get the extra spot. So Will Warren may not even be with the Yankees in September, now that I think about it, just because of the fact that they will have Schmidt at some point coming back. And Dominguez, again, we just talked about Dominguez. I don't know. I do think that he has the potential of being an impact bat for the Yankees. And I do think he has a higher ceiling than Verdugo. So that's how I'd answer this question. You're muted.
Sorry. The power of the mute button. William Orsland. Love the podcast. Quick question. With the Blue Jays intentionally walking Aaron Judge so many times and probably more teams to follow, would Boone consider moving Judge up to the leadoff spot? Not only does your best hitter get the most at-bats this way, but it feels like a more dangerous game for opposing managers to put Judge on first base with no outs with Soto, Stanton, and Wells coming up. The way Judge is hitting, even if Stanton heats up in the cleanup spot, wouldn't opposing managers rather take their chances with a hot Stanton than the best version of Aaron Judge we've ever seen? I don't think it matters. I mean, Joe Girardi mentioned this yesterday in the broadcast, and I agreed with him. Who is the player that you could put behind Judge that would convince an opposing manager to pitch to him? If this is like what you're considering with your strategy, there isn't a guy. He leads all the offensive categories. So everybody behind him is naturally going to be less of a threat than Aaron Judge himself. So I'd rather have Judge up with the opportunity to drive runs in than him starting off the game just for him to get walked, and then you go after Soto. Like, Judge is going to be pitched to at some point. Like, I don't think every game he's going to be walked four times. So he is going to have opportunities to impact the game. I'd rather those few opportunities, or however many opportunities that present themselves, be with the potential for multiple players on base and multiple, like, run damage than him just leading off. I think we spoke about this in the over the break. Like, in 22, they led off. There's at one point in the season, there was nobody else in the lineup besides Glaber. It was a necessity. You know, they didn't really have a choice. That's not the case now. They have multiple options. They can rotate whoever they want in the leadoff spot, but Soto is always there. And Wells has hit well enough. I think Stanton will be fine once he gets going. They just need to give Stanton at bats, by the way. That annoys me that they sit him. And it's just like, I know you're building him up, but he's not doing anything but hitting. Like, you don't need to build him up. Like, you should have given him a rehab assignment. But that's a different conversation.
Yep. I'm in agreement, by the way.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. Like, help Stanton out. You know what I mean? Like, one way or the other, help him. I don't understand that. But I think Judge should just be right where he is. And when the opportunities present themselves and there's some traffic on the bases, you know, maybe that's a chance that they pitch to him and they go after him. I think some teams will pitch to him, though. Like, I don't think everybody's going to do what Toronto did. Like, John Schneider made a choice, which is fine. But he's also killed the Blue Jays since John Schneider has been there. So I'm sure John Schneider's just sick of it. You know what I mean? Like, some of it is just the human element. Like, I'm tired of this guy busting my ass every day. I don't think every team is going to do that. And I don't think that's going to happen in the playoffs. They're going to go after Aaron Judge. Like, I think that in those scenarios, you can't roll the dice that much. You know, they pitched to Barry Bonds in 02 a lot in the playoffs, you know, and the Angels still won. So I think when you have the better teams, they're going to say we're good enough to either beat you or win while still pitching to you. So some teams might do it, but I don't think when it gets to, like, the crucial games that we're going to see that a ton, just because there's too much on the line with every at bat.
There was a lot of overreaction this weekend to Judge getting intentionally walked. Yeah. And it's not new that he's been the best hitter in baseball, and no team before the Blue Jays went this route. And now everybody's saying, like, oh my God, like, you know, he's going to get walked 200 times for the rest of the year. Like, no team besides the Blue Jays has really done this all season. And Judge has been the best hitter by far in Major League Baseball. So I don't think it's going to be a trend where every game he has two intentional walks. Like, I don't see it. I don't. That's not to say that he won't get intentionally walked more often. Like, I do think that's possible. But going, what did he have, like, four or five intentional walks this series? Like, I think that's extreme. I don't think that's going to continue. And I do agree with you that teams are going to pitch to him in certain situations just because, like, they have no choice. I do think that in the playoffs, you know, maybe the teams are more cautious with, like, having them beat him. And, you know, if Austin Wells or Verdugo gets a single or something, like, they'll live with it. Because Aaron Judge is in scoring position the moment he steps into the batter's box. And you do have to be somewhat cautious with that just because he can flip a game with one swing. But again, like you said, teams did pitch to Barry Bonds in the playoffs. The Angels pitched to Barry Bonds.
And they pitched to Aaron Judge.
Yeah, and they pitched to Aaron Judge.
They pitched to him, too. They pitched to him in 22 and wasn't the same guy. So,
and also, one of the big reasons why Boone moved Judge to the leadoff spot in 22 is because they wanted him to get 62 home runs.
Right.
And that was a way to ensure that he had the most at-bats possible every game to hit 62 home runs. It wasn't because like it was like the best strategy for the Yankees. They felt they wanted to help Judge hit 62 home runs. That's right. That's one of the biggest reasons why they did it. So I don't think that the Yankees will move Judge to the leadoff spot. I don't even think they'll move Judge to the number two spot. I think they're fine with the production that they have gotten. I believe they have the best offense in baseball at this time. Let me see, quick check. Yep, the Yankees have the best offense in baseball, 119 WRC plus, and that's with Judge hitting third. They're not going to change it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't think they should. So thank you, everyone, for your questions. There were a lot. We appreciate it. Thanks for all the interest and enthusiasm to send us questions. We appreciate it. We're running a little long, so we're going to get out of here. You can find us on your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on YouTube of the same name. Please give us a 5-star review. Chris, any final thoughts?
I'm interested to see how well the Yankees do in these next 2 weeks. They're playing some really bad teams. Three against the Angels. The Rangers are down this year. Three against them. Three in Chicago against the White Sox and then the Tigers. Like, could the Yankees go 10-2 over these next 2 weeks? Like 9-3? Like, I certainly think it's possible that the Yankees could be in first place in the AL East at some point next week, just given how weak their schedule is in the, in these next 12 games.
Yeah. They got to take full advantage of it and stop losing when Baltimore loses and winning when Baltimore wins. Like, it's, you know, it's time. There's a chance to potentially create some distance here. So they got to take advantage of it. Hopefully, well, thankfully they're playing much better than they were a couple weeks ago. So, thank you, Chris. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will speak to you all next week.